All right, everybody, welcome to Lecture 33 in this American History program for the junior and senior high class of History at Our House. This is the test week, or in other words, we have test two coming up at the end of this week. So we are in our test preparation phase, essentially, which means today we will do some review of some key content, including Anchor Facts, which you have been submitting. I see this stream of homework assignments that's making its way into my inbox. So I'm really happy to see that. And I would like to have more of a discussion concerning that over the course of the next few weeks. I'm excited to see what your thoughts are in terms of justifying your four choices. And so keep that up. And if you haven't handed in your homework assignment yet, you still have to the end of today without it being late. But with regard to homework, my philosophy is always absolutely better late than never. So if it has to be late, it has to be late. And so go ahead and, you know, do what you need to do here. I'm going to be setting up a document online, which is called the Facts Practice and Homework Tracker. and you can, it will be a document that will help everybody here keep track of whether or not they are, you know, handing in the homework, or they're falling behind or whatever. And so it's going to be online. I might even be able to initialize that document today. We'll see. This will be the first item on it. What else is on the agenda here? Since this is a test week, we have one more lecture of new material this week, which is tomorrow, on the breakup of Christianity and the other features of that story, which we just started into last week. On Wednesday, we have History Through Art, which is a departure from our normal way of doing things. And the purpose of that is to give you that extra day to do your test preparation. So if you were to go to the class webpage today, or right this minute, I'll share my desktop with you. If you're going to the class webpage right this minute, you will see the last of the class notes that you require in order to be able to take the test. Week 12 and 13 are there posted now. And so it's up to you to collect the class notes from week 8 through 13. 8 through 13 is what is on the test. And so that segment of the course, I've entitled this part of the course, The Shaping of the New World. Right? It's the transition from the way the world was in the time of Christopher Columbus towards the way that it is now, in which, of course, he is arguably the main agent of change in terms of transforming that world. And so we're going to be looking and reviewing today three of those segments of things that happened. Okay, so the test preparation sheets will be posted on the class webpage shortly after the class. So look for them there. And as I said, you'll have 3 days to work on them. And then we'll discuss your answers in class on Thursday. Okay? And then, of course, well, where you go from there is up to you. If you're in the high school level, obviously you have to take the test, and I will be grading them. Keen can be happy to look in his inbox and see the graded test that he got back, and Griffin as well. So those are my high school guys. The rest of you guys will get the grading key sent to your parents, and they'll be able to grade your work. And while you've got the entire week, next week, basically, because we're off, so for Thanksgiving. And so, we'll have a week off, and this is the start of the nice holiday period for everybody. Hope you enjoy it. Hope it goes well for you. So you'll have plenty of time to do the test and rest up and have some turkey and then come back to class week after next Monday. Okay. So, anyway, what were some of the things on the agenda for today's review class? Well, one of them was this. All right. One of the items was the challenge that I put to you in terms of when is this? Right? This painting we've been looking at relates an important episode, a meaningful episode from history. And so what is it? And so I asked you in particular, after which voyage of Christopher Columbus was this? Now, the only way to get your answer, an answer to this question, was to go do some research, because we did not discuss it in class directly. We discussed four voyages by Christopher Columbus. And I kind of outlined them very, very briefly and showed you a map, but I didn't tell you the details. And so and we can't always cover everything in the classes. We only have a certain amount of time. So in the class, we didn't get to this particular issue of what had happened over the course of the various voyages by Columbus to the Americas. And so I put to you the challenge, where was this? Especially, when was this? Especially since it was so obviously related to our history through art segment. So, who was able to find the answer? After which voyage of Christopher Columbus was this? Timothy says he can chat the answer. I would permit that if nobody else has a better way to present it. So I take it either you guys didn't get to it, or you forgot, or you're too busy working on the writing assignment. All right, but Keen does have it. So, Keen, go ahead.
All right, so I believe it was after his third voyage. It was in 1500 that he was arrested.
Okay, why was he arrested?
He was arrested because someone accused him of abusing his governmental powers or something. I can't remember exactly, but I did, if you would allow this, I want to read what he wrote. He wrote while he was after his arrest, he wrote something that I think is very interesting. Do you want me to read it?
All right, go ahead.
All right, so he wrote, "It is now 17 years since I came to serve these princes with the enterprise of the Indies. They made me pass 8 of them in discussion, and at the end rejected it as a thing of jest. Nevertheless, I persisted therein. Over there, I have placed under their sovereignty more land than there is in Africa and Europe, and more than 1,700 islands. In 7 years, I, by the divine will, made that conquest. At a time when I was entitled to expect rewards for retirement, I was incontinently arrested and sent home loaded with chains. The accusation was brought out of malice on the basis of charges made by civilians who had revolted and wished to take possession of the land. I beg your graces, with the zeal of faithful Christians in whom their highnesses have confidence, to read all my papers and consider how I, who came from so far to serve these princes, now at the end of my days have been despoiled of my honor and my property without cause, wherein is neither justice nor mercy."
Wow, right, nice passage. Yeah, I don't know about the validity of the passage, but it certainly captures the essence of what did happen. And not only that, Columbus's awareness of his own historical importance and his profound sense of injustice as to having been treated. I like some of the phrases in that, Keen, the way that he talked about the princes of his time. And it really just reinforces for me the whole concept of Columbus being a man of a certain quality. And in broad strokes, I just simply call that a Renaissance man. And he is living in a world of barbarians. And Isabella and Ferdinand, they got pretty clothes, and they eat well, and they look nice, but in their souls, they are mayonnaise and armor. And in a way, they can't even help themselves, because their European civilization has elevated them to this role and demands that they play this role. And this role involves, and they can't escape it. It involves the use of force. It means that you must embrace the idea that you have the right to rule others. And therefore, other human beings are disposable. And because you have the divine right. And so on and so forth. And so it's really hard to imagine this. A lot of people, I think, when they study history, fail to have what's sometimes called historical empathy. You guys know what empathy is as opposed to sympathy? What's the difference between those? Are two interesting and related concepts that are, I think, very psychologically important in life, but what's the difference? What's sympathy on the one hand and empathy on the other? Ben, how would you elaborate that?
Well, sympathy is feeling sorry for someone. Empathy is knowing what they're going through.
Yeah, okay. Right, so do you necessarily feel sympathy if you are empathetic?
Not necessarily.
No, right? Okay, so empathy means being able to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. That's it, right? It just means being able to understand them as who they are and what they're going through, what their situation is, know what it is, and be able to appreciate it from their perspective. I think the simplest expression is, right, being able to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. Now, when you're able to do that, it's usually a really, really key ingredient in order to be able to have any good conversation or any useful or productive argument or really any good human relationships. There's got to be some empathy there. It's a really crucial human trait and ability that we have to put ourselves in somebody else's shoes. And especially when we are arguing with somebody else about somebody that we love, especially that we are hurt by somebody, and that we have our personal relationships, it's really, really crucial that we have empathy. Now, that doesn't mean, as Ben pointed out, that we feel sympathy for somebody. So it's not the same thing as, because, all right, I see where you're coming from. That's empathy. And you can articulate it and you can say it and you can show, all right, I understand what you feel. I understand why you feel it and so on, but I disagree. And I don't sympathize because, and then there could be a whole, follow on there, right? So sympathy as that you feel for them and that you, if it's a matter of a grievance or injustice, then sympathy means you feel bad for that person. Not just you understand them, but you do feel bad for them. And in all likelihood, then you're going to act in some manner that reflects your sense of the situation. So those are two crucial things. Historical empathy means this: being able to put yourself in the shoes of somebody else in history. Now that is a big ask, as they say. That is a difficult thing to do. Why is it that much more difficult than just regular old empathy, which by itself is not easy? Why is historical empathy difficult? Especially, I mean, Columbus or whatever, right? Some person of an ancient time. Alexander?
For two reasons.
Okay.
First of all, because you can't go and meet them. And second of all, because they lived so long ago and in a world where different things are taken for granted.
Yeah, okay, good point. I like, those are two good answers, right? So one of them is you can't meet them. So you can't ask them questions. You can't really get to know them in that way that's that's all important in our personal relationship. So you don't have a personal contact with them. And then the second thing is, it's hard to transport yourself into their context, their cultural context, because life at that time was very, very different than it is now. So different that it's really difficult for us to take seriously certain points of view or certain things which in other times were taken for granted, right? We don't walk around taking for granted that our lives are at the mercy of a king and queen. In fact, quite the opposite, right? We have this very much taking for granted kind of sense of the freedoms in America and democracy and all those variety of things that we have. What I sense in Americans, when I look at them, I see a lot of taking for granted of these things, which are completely abnormal in history. So it's hard to go from that to going back to a time like this and imagine yourself, I don't know, pick a character, not an important character, right? Imagine that you are, if you're one of the girls here, be this person. Be this person, because she's a great character, right? She is looking straight at Columbus. And in order to figure this out, you've got to be this person. You've got to be this interested and wonder about what the validity of his case is, right? And if you want to be one of the men here, I don't know if you want to have this haircut, but you got to be something like somebody like this person, or you know, maybe this guy. This guy is really interesting because he's taking it very seriously. He's there in the moment and he's paying very, very close attention to it, right? So you've got to be these people if you want to go back and study Columbus and think clearly about what his situation was and what's it like. What's it like to live with a mayonnaise and armor? What is a mayonnaise and armor going to do to you? Remember how we were doing anchor facts and their connection to the Peace of Augsburg in our last review session? Well, this is again, anchor facts help us in our awareness and in our historical empathy. Because if you can hold in your mind and take seriously the idea which is so foreign to us today. But if you can take seriously the idea of mayonnaise and armor, and whenever you go into the past and into a civilization that has such a person, that you immediately recognize it, and that you immediately understand all of the constraints that that puts on everybody in that society, you're starting to be ready to have historical empathy. You're starting to be. I mean, there's so much more to it, but you've got to. Priya, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think it would be easy for me because I am really good at taking myself back to places. It does take a little bit of research. You can't just go and do it. You have to know what you're thinking about and doing as that person. You have to know about their life. You can't just go.
True, and yeah, you know, very good point, Bria, and I want to add to that. So Bria's absolutely right that in order to have empathy, you do have to do research in the historical sense. In order to have empathy, you've got to do some research, especially if you're talking about a personal context. If you're talking about an individual and their choices and actions, that's not easy to do. And then, in addition to that, Bria, what I would say is, beyond the research element, you also have to have historical imagination. Because you have to have a good imagination to have historical empathy. Because you've got to be capable of imagining life. That's what you have to do. You have to imagine it. You have to take that research. Take those basic facts and awareness that you have, and then imagine what it would have been like. And in that regard, history through art, or art that represents history, is extremely valuable. Because that's what artists do. That's what they do, is they give us a picture of the universe that we would have been living in. And they transport us into that ancient context and allow us to see what it would have been like. So, really, really interesting. And this painting is a great example of that. Priya, go ahead.
In order to have empathy, you have to do empathy for the whole entire thing. You can't just do it on one person.
Well, okay. I'm not sure what you mean by that. Can you elaborate?
So say we wanted to have historical empathy for this Columbus guy. You kind of have to take everything into the whole picture. You couldn't just focus on him entirely.
Oh, that, okay.
You gotta think about everyone else and his reaction to everyone else.
That's a good point, Priya. So it's one part of historical empathy that goes along with research is you have to try to understand the full context of what it is that you are looking at and anything that you're trying to understand. So I have, you know, when I look back at Columbus, excuse me, I got a sneeze coming on. I think it's going to come when I don't want it. Okay. When I look at this painting, one of the things that I am reminded of is, in terms of historical empathy, is I feel empathy for and empathy towards, I'm not sure what the right article is there, even a certain sympathy for Queen Isabella. I don't often feel that for monarchs. I mean, monarchs, and one of the things, I mean, monarchs are fascinating characters in history because they are thrust into a role involuntarily, which no human being in their right mind would want. However, if you are in that society and in that context and you are thrust into that role, it's one that's, you know, you've got to take seriously and you've got to live that role and you've got to do the job. And so it's a rough ride. And Isabella was, you know, married to Ferdinand, for instance. Anybody have historical empathy in that situation? Right? We were just talking about the Habsburg sandwich and that kind of stuff. What's one of the things that's required here in order to understand monarchs and historical empathy? Isabella marries Ferdinand. Tell me what you understand about that. And then, as Ben said, we got to separate that from, do you feel any sympathy towards her? Alexander?
Well, she didn't choose to marry him. Her dad probably, Ferdinand's dad chose to marry them together.
All right, so she was forced into a political marriage. The chance of her being able to not marry Ferdinand is really, really, really fractionally small, and it probably would have resulted in her being rejected by her family and living in poverty. So, all right, so living with Ferdinand, whether he was good-looking or not, and I don't know what exactly he looked like, but, you know, and whether he was a nice guy or not or any of that, right? That's it. She's married to him. They're going to have children. They're going to produce a dynasty, right? They're going to rule a kingdom. This is part of her life. And she's got to live it. And then she's got to figure out whether or not, you know, trust this guy Columbus and manage this event, which is the discovery of the New World. And how it's going to impact her and her kingdom and so on. Priya, go ahead.
Sorry, this is going to take a minute. So her dad is actually dead a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
She actually chose Ferdinand, and her brother, who was the king, wasn't too happy about that. But he didn't really want to fight her anymore, and it took a long time for that to work out. I just add that because I know a lot about
him. Okay, very good. Now, when you say she chose Ferdinand, why did she choose him?
I think she chose him because he was younger, and better looking than most of the other guys that are brothers.
That might be connected, and that is where we have to be careful, right, in making sure that when we do research in history, we have to be careful because it will be presented in different ways by different writers. And so I think in the end, you have to understand that it's a political marriage and that's probably the most important motive. It's nice and very, very, very rare that husbands and wives who were king and queen actually had any affection for each other. I don't know in this case. But anyway, Columbus is thrust into this situation where we have these kinds of people and they have their priorities. And so they send this investigator because, well, people have been sending messages back from the Americas and they're saying things are going badly. This place is a mess. And in part it was true. In part there were a lot of different things that were going badly. So there was contact with the natives was not going well. And I'm sure that the Spanish have a lot of blame there to carry, and a lot of it's unclear and a lot of it we'll never know. But I'm sure that the Spanish had, you know, a certain way about them with treating these primitive people that was extremely rough. And on the other hand, if we're going to have historical empathy for the Spanish, which we should have, try to imagine yourself living among people that are naked with body paint and with whom you can't communicate and who have very strange rituals and who, well, quite frankly, are unpredictable and weird. And how well are you going to manage that situation? What are the odds that you're going to quickly learn their language and their customs and that you're all going to get along and that things are going to be just all nice and comfortable? And meanwhile, you get sick because the foods that you eat are strange for you. Maybe you're carrying diseases and you don't know it because there's no scientific medicine and people are getting sick and they think that it's a plague from the gods and so on. And how do you sort out this experience? It's unbelievably complex. And unfortunately for Columbus, I think he fell into a trap in a way of wanting to be the governor of this new world. I think in a way it was a mistake. I think he should, you've got to have empathy. I don't know exactly what motivated his choice of this versus another thing. But choosing to do this, I think, was a mistake. And maybe he could have seen past the situation and realized, oh, wait a minute. Once I show this place to the nobility of Spain, what's going to happen to it? You know, that would have been the question that he might have thought through a little bit more clearly. And had he done that, I think he would have been forced to see that this was not going to go well. That the Spanish people were not particularly civilized, and their conduct was going to be very difficult to control. And his authority as a governor would almost certainly come under fire, and he would have lots of conflicts over things that really he didn't care about. So that was, you know, something that maybe he should have done differently, and he could have escaped some of this, but he didn't. He tried to manage the situation as best he could. He balance his priorities against those of the crown and get things done, and it was a really, really difficult thing to get through. And in the end, well, I don't think there's any other way to look at it than he was dealt quite a severe injustice. That regardless of any mismanagements and other issues that occurred, that there was a fundamental truth here that needed to be honored by the king and queen. And that is what Columbus is pointing at. That map there, he's basically saying, that map doesn't happen without me. And that's more than, it's just absolutely true that the culture of the time was really pretty awful. And it, you didn't find men who were willing to make a voyage like this. And it was he had to break through a lot of barriers in order to make it happen. This happened despite the culture that Christopher Columbus was living in. He did it despite the culture he lived in. And so yeah, he deserved a lot more. So yeah, it's a tragic story. And nowadays people have just about zero historical empathy. We live in very strange times. People do not do the, and Bria, I guarantee you, you know more about Columbus and Isabella and Ferdinand than 99.999% of the population. And meanwhile, people who know almost nothing, have an incredibly judgmental attitude with regard to things like this. And it's really shocking the way that people make pronouncements about Columbus and people from other times, in today's society. It's really, really kind of disturbing to me because as a historian, I have no trouble condemning people who did things that were horrible and I like to, but I also like to praise people who did things that were great and original and true and positive. So it's always shocking to me when people turn on characters like this on the basis of ignorance and a kind of presumption that's unbelievable. So hopefully you guys are getting some of the picture. It takes a long time to build a proper, a picture of the past and of its really important milestones. It takes a long time. And our goal here, in this program is to orient ourselves mainly. It's very hard to get any further than that into the story. Any further than being well oriented to it. And it takes a while to build up the knowledge, to build up the framework, to hang that knowledge on and to make it worthwhile and to see the connections up to the present day. These things are hard to do. So it's our goal and we gradually build on top of those anchor facts. So we're going to do that again. I do want to go back to more facts from history and work those anchor facts for all they're worth. And we're going to do a variety of things moving forward here. One of the things we're going to do is we are going to dominate those anchor facts. So there won't be one that you don't know everything that you need to know about. But beyond that, we're going to use them regularly to connect with events that we encounter, such as the Peace of Augsburg, like we did last week on Wednesday, I think it was. We took cuius regio, eius religio, and we linked it to every event in the anchor fact timeline, right? And we'll do that over and over and over again and see. And then what we're going to be looking for as we move forward, and you yourself are going to have to do some of this, some choosing and thinking on your own, the question that partly you're going to have to answer is, what other anchor facts do we need in order to understand the world we live in? What else, among the things that we are encountering, which of them are anchor facts? Which of them are not? And so, as a result, and if we find some that are, then, well, we're going to have to work those too. They're going to have to get worked in to our memorization efforts. And anything that's not, and anything that we can't really tie to the world around us, we're going to let it go. And as we should, until such time as we can articulate a meaningful connection between that and what we see around us, then we should let go of it. But I guarantee you, there's been a considerable amount of stuff that we've encountered so far that we shouldn't let go of. So we'll have to talk over as the course proceeds. And we're going to start moving a little bit more quickly through history here with colonization and stuff like that. We're going to have to talk about, what do we need to make sure we understand this. And what do we need from the past that tells us more about the world that we live in? That's going to be our job, to uncover that and to hold on to those facts as we proceed. All right, so I don't think we have a need. That lasted longer than I thought it would, but I thought it was an interesting discussion, so hopefully you guys enjoyed it. What we're going to do here is this. I think we'll break early. And what you need to do is keep an eye out for the test preparation sheets, which will be posted on there within the hour. Okay? And get started on them as soon as you can. If you haven't done your writing assignment, that's your first priority. And, but other than that, look for the test prep sheets and go from there. And just a reminder, again, if you're late on it, here's where you go to find the homework assignment. Right there in bold letters, right there, easy for you to download, PDF format, okay? Last thoughts today on the man in the manacles. And anything else? Bria wants to have a private chat. We can do that. And actually, just FYI, anybody can do that. If you want to have a private chat after the official class recording is done, you can always request something like that. So, yeah, Bria, why don't we bring the class to a close and then... you and I can just chat one-on-one for a second. Okay? Everybody else, thank you very much. Good luck with the test prep and talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye, Mr. Bye.
All right, bye.
See you later.